diplomacy is back at the center of our foreign policy.
My style in diplomacy is my style as a human being.
Diplomacy, John, the job of statesmen.
And I thought it was drinking and dancing.
Now, you'd be aware over the past few weeks, Geraldine has had discussions on Saturday Extra about the role of diplomacy in foreign affairs. And she's spoken to two of Australia's most distinguished former diplomats, John McCarthy and Sue Boyd, to tap into and draw from their experience. And they've been fascinating interviews, well worth catching up with if you've missed them. Well, today, something a little different but still connected. I'm talking with the US Consul General, Sharon Hudson-Dean, about being a diplomat posted here to Australia and about her own career trajectory within the US State Department. Sharon has held posts in Zimbabwe, in Russia, in South Africa, Nepal, Latvia, and has served in Australia not once but twice. We like her already. Thanks for coming back, Sharon. She's leaving Australia shortly, though, so we've asked her into the studio for an exit interview, if you like, about her thoughts on diplomacy and working within today's world of foreign affairs. Sharon Hudson-Dean, a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's really great to be here this morning.
Sharon, listen, you have worked, as I've listed, across a range of regions on all kinds of issues. Can I ask you to narrow down some of the most difficult of those issues and the most difficult postings and how you've dealt with them?
Sure, pleasure. I've had a very wonderful and rewarding career. It's been a great honor to serve my country and to represent the United States in so many different places and regions. And as you mentioned, I have worked on a variety of very important foreign policy issues that have really gone across U.S. interests and across the major issues facing the globe today. So, for instance, when I was in Southern Africa, as you mentioned, I did tours in both South Africa and Zimbabwe. We were very focused on health, which is relevant to today, absolutely. At that time, it was focused very much on HIV/AIDS. The United States was the biggest contributor to all of the efforts to combat and reduce HIV/AIDS across the globe. We were putting most of our funding into Africa at that point. And it was the full gamut of programs from providing antiretrovirals to giving support to communities. There were a lot of orphans in South Africa in particular whose parents had both died of HIV/AIDS. And so one of the programs I enjoyed the most was working with grandmothers who were suddenly having to support large groups of young children who had no parents. And we would give them places where they could spend time or extra assistance. So health topics, that was a big challenge. It was confronting. It was very difficult. And when I first arrived in South Africa, they had a health minister who actually denied the origins of HIV/AIDS and claimed you could push back on the virus using African vegetables. And so we had to work through that very difficult
period.
Feels
strangely familiar, though, I've got to say.
So, and that's relevant today now for working on all the things that we're doing on the global pandemic, sending out vaccines, the raw materials for vaccines, working with other countries. Right at this very moment, the Indian foreign minister is in the United States, and he's talking to our senior leaders and to private sector representatives and the multilateral organizations in New York to get assistance for India. The United States is fully supportive of doing as much as we can to help India at this moment. So that's one topic. Another one is military threats around the world. Before Australia, my most recent overseas assignment was in the Baltics, in Latvia, as you mentioned. Latvia is a NATO member. They're also an EU member country. And they are very aware of the threats from Russia and have been for some time. When I arrived there in 2014, the Russians had just taken over Crimea and were supporting all of the fighting going on in eastern Ukraine. The Baltics were quite concerned that could happen to them. And they invited the U.S. and NATO to send in military representatives and troops to do exercises in the Baltics and to make sure that we are all functioning as one alliance very well. And the U.S. stepped forward quickly on that.
I was going to ask you, what does diplomacy mean for you? But I'm getting the sense from that answer that you're talking about very practical, measurable, returns and improvements in America's interests, but which also have mutual benefits.
That's very true. But one thing, though, that I think is also important, and we have a famous quote that we like to refer to from one of our foreign policy leaders from the 1960s, and that was Edward R. Murrow, who was a very distinguished journalist. He worked for CBS News, reported on World War II out of London, very well respected, and President Kennedy made him the first director of the U.S. Information Agency when we were trying to share information with the world about the benefits of democracy and good economics. And Murrow always quoted that the most important part of diplomacy was the last 3 feet. And by that, he meant it's the face-to-face, it's the relationships, how we develop those and maintain them. That's in large part the role of a diplomat. It's what you can do face-to-face and then how you sustain that over time so that when push comes to shove and you really need to get something done and you need to work with your partners or you need to confront those who are doing things you don't like, you've got relationships that can help you do that.
Ms. Sue Boyd spoke at length, of course, about the significance of those personal relationships and how significant they are in those moments when things get difficult.
Absolutely.
I mean, following through on that reference you make in terms of face-to-face engagement, of course, a time of COVID means that you, like everyone else, have been very restricted in terms of your ability to actually go out and meet with people. Has it really made for a new set of challenges for diplomats the world over, COVID, in the sense that how do you, even if you've newly arrived in a country, how do you begin to know it when you can't leave your home or your embassy?
That has been super challenging. I've been in a lucky position that I was already established here in Australia and had had a full 18 months to build those relationships. And so moving online was not as difficult for me personally and a lot of my team members. But I have colleagues who transferred out. For instance, a good friend of mine went out to work at our mission to the OECD and another one to our mission to the OSCE in Europe last year. So in the middle of 2020, when Europe was back and forth on their lockdowns, mostly in a lockdown phase when my colleagues got there, and they suddenly had to engage in these large multilateral forums with serious policy discussions, but doing it all virtually with people they hadn't met before. They jumped right into it. You know, did the best they could.
There's no alternative.
There's no alternative. You keep it moving along. Now they're starting to come out of their lockdowns, and I'm seeing messages and pictures on Facebook that they're jumping in with lots of enthusiasm to do that work that they weren't able to do.
Now, there's an old joke, Sharon, now not so funny, like lots of old jokes, that to get into the State Department, you had to be pale, male, and Yale.
Yes.
Now, clearly that didn't apply to you. How accessible today is a career in diplomacy in the US?
I would say quite accessible. Accessible. When you come in, when we enter, most of our junior officer classes are 50% women, and we do make a big effort to bring in more minorities and a more diverse representation of the United States. There are several programs that have started in order to do that. So, for instance, we place senior U.S. diplomats in universities where we historically have not received applicants, so not the Ivy Leagues, but sending them out to University of Alabama or some historically black colleges and universities in order to talk about careers in diplomacy and encourage students to apply and help them through the process. So the entry classes have gotten a lot better, and definitely on the gender side. Where we face the biggest challenges is at the senior levels, and that's where women and minorities are deeply underrepresented in terms of being out there in the positions as whether it's ambassador or senior levels. The Biden administration and Secretary Blinken have made this a top priority. They are really talking about it and focusing on it. And you also see through their nominations, who they're putting out there just in their first few months, that they want to address this. The very first nomination that went through and got confirmed early on is our ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas Greenfield. She's an African-American senior female diplomat, has done several fantastic high-level jobs, and now is in arguably one of the most important foreign policy positions for us.
I mean, I know from many of the places where I've lived and worked, so Gaza, Afghanistan, Iraq, the embassies in conflict zones are all often very male, you know, from the ambassadors to the security teams, the policy directors. Does that limit your career options as a woman who might have a family? I know you've brought your two daughters along with you today, and they're very welcome, and we're pleased to have them here. But does it mean that your trajectory is set in a particular direction by your personal choices?
I would say no. You don't have to go work in a war zone in order to have a really good career. And I haven't done it myself. There are a lot of challenging places where you can use your skills to address really difficult issues without having it be one of those super restrictive places. At any given time, we have around 6 to 8 places where our assignments are only 1 year and you have to go without a family because it is that dangerous. But then there are lots of other ones where it's challenging, but there's a support system to help get you through, and you can take your family, and there would be an international school that would provide the services, the education services that kids would need, et cetera. So for me, Zimbabwe falls in that category, Nepal falls in that category. And I also did an assignment in Georgia in the early 2000s, so they were only 10 years out of the Soviet Union, and it was really challenging then. No electricity during the winter, lots of services cuts, lots of corruption. I loved it. We did incredible programs. The Georgian people are amazing. Over time, we could actually see progress, and that they were opening up. They were keen to become part of the Western world, as you know, the old-fashioned term, but the European Union, NATO. They're not in those organizations at this point, but they've laid those out as goals.
Sharon, you arrived in Australia and have served the Trump administration, and now there's a very different president in the White House, in Joe Biden. Now, as much as you can share, how tricky is it to manage that kind of a handbrake turn after an election when you transition from one administration to another that's so different in character?
The transitions in administration is part of our process and something we're really proud of. I've worked for 2 Democratic presidents and 2 Republican presidents in my career, so I've gone through a number of transitions. One of the things that is generally really good about the way that our process works is that the president-elect puts together a transition team. I mean, and this usually happens even before the election, in order to be prepared. So whether you win or not, you want to be prepared when you come into office with the key people around you putting together the policies and the lists of nominees. You need to get going right away. Our country is big. It is complicated. It is powerful. And we need to make sure that there is a great process for handing over the government and keeping it moving along. We take that very seriously. So the Biden administration did that. They came in with a super team. They're putting out their nominations and filling all the jobs. And as you can clearly see, they're doing lots of announcements and trips and addressing key issues right away.
Australia was your first overseas assignment, as I understand it, in the mid-90s. You went to Canberra first and then came to Sydney as a junior diplomat, and you've returned now as the Consul General. What impressions do you have about how Australia has changed in terms of its place in world affairs?
Yes, it's really rewarding to be able to come back at a later stage and to see how things have changed and to reconnect with old friends, which I've managed to do as well. It's wonderful. One of the things that to me very much I see is how Australia has figuratively moved very much into the center of global affairs and definitely Indo-Pacific affairs, and certainly from the American point of view. We highly value our relationship with Australia and what Australian leadership has to say and how Australia analyzes what's going on in the world. When I was here in the mid-90s, our technology was not great, so I was working on communicating with Washington literally using a fax machine and the old-fashioned cables. We're in the same office still in the MLC Center. We had one computer, and it was a Wang computer. This was in my little section.
One of the best.
It was awful with a little blinking green light. So we didn't use email. Everything was on this long time line because you had the time difference and trying to get answers back and forth. Today, it's completely the opposite. You know, it's instantaneous communication and everyone's online, but also it's really important. And so we are asked a lot, what's going on in Australia? What do Australians think? How are we going to move forward on this? Lots of communication. Biden administration has made it very clear we are not going to take action without consulting our allies, and Australia is one of the most important.
Sharon Hudson-Dean, thank you so much for sparing the time this morning. That's the outgoing US Consul General, Sharon Hudson-Dean, and we wish you all the best in your next posting.
Thank you so much. Great to be here today.